Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright sunshiny day. Gonna be a bright sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. It's gonna be a bright sunshiny day.
Everyone, are you there, Suzette?
I'm here.
Okay, good. I'm sorry, I had a problem with the phone there for a moment. Good evening and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. And I'm waiting to come on here to talk to you tonight and just wanted to let you know this is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men or bisexual men or transgender men or any other kind of sexual men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments at all that you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or you can email me at bondk@aol.com. That's bondk@aol.com. Before I introduce my co-host for tonight, Suzette Vernon, I do want to make mention that we're getting ready for our next healing weekend. Did you know that, Suzette?
No. Tell me more.
It's coming to a town not too far from you.
Yay.
Not too close, but not too far. It's in Virginia.
Okay. You're getting closer.
I know, I'm getting there, but it's going to be April 23rd and April 24th in Virginia, and I'm really excited about this because we have some outstanding women who are in Virginia who came to our Philadelphia Healing Weekend, and I just love them so much. I said, I have to see you ladies again. I'll come to your neighborhood, and so that's what we're doing. This is right outside Washington, D.C., and we're going to have to stay in a beautiful hotel. We're going to have wonderful speakers and guests, and it's the most wonderful, exhilarating time for women to meet each other. Some of our past women are going to be coming there to give guidance and support to other women. And this last healing weekend in Philadelphia was just magnificent. So many good friendships were made, new connections were made. We had a wonderful therapist join us, Kathy Holquin. We also had Marina do a writing journal seminar for us. So I'm always trying to add in new stuff that will really motivate women to start moving forward on their healing journey. If you are interested in attending, there's no cost for this, just the cost of your travel and your room and one dinner, then please get in touch with me at bonkaye@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send you information. And I look forward to meeting some wonderful new women in Virginia as well. So tonight I'm very excited. Suzette is my co-hostess. Welcome back, Suzette. How are you?
I am great, Bonnie. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, too. I know it's been a hectic time and for many people, but that's all right. Life is usually hectic for most people, so I'm happy to be there and available to many women who really are in serious trouble and they need some light to shine on them what the problem is. You know, sometimes I just get so teary-eyed when I read letters from women, Suzette. I'm sure you have that experience, too, with the women you work with as a coach. And you hear such sad stories of women who have sacrificed 25, 30, 35 years of their life, or 40 years. And for what? For living a false life with someone who can never love them the way they need to be loved. And who make them lose who they are in that marriage. And I think, you know, that's the most important thing to realize, that you can get yourself back, even though it's going to take a lot of work. I guess the longer you've been in a destructive relationship, the longer it takes to get back.
Yeah.
And you can't do it alone. You really have to have support and help. And that's why I'm very proud that I have a network of wonderful professionals, you know, including Suzette, who's a life coach, who can really help people move on in their lives and start again. You know, some of the guests that I've been working with, you know, professional therapists and all, say that trauma is such an underlooked situation, emotional trauma as far as people's recovery. How do you feel about that?
I think it is, too. I think, you know, matters of the heart, because they go undetected, a lot of times we minimize those, but they can be just as devastating, you know, they can be just as harmful as a physical malady like a heart attack or, you know, some other type of disease that you have to go to a doctor for. And the matters of the heart are just as important to go to a professional for that as well, especially something as traumatizing as being in a relationship with a person who is gay or bisexual or whatever. It can do a number on your heart. And you got to deal with the brokenness and the sense of loss day after day, the disappointment day after day, hopes dashed day after day. It really does a number on you.
So, Suzette, today I visited a very close friend of mine who I've known for many years. And we were talking, and she said to me, you know, just between you and me, she said, honestly speaking, when you met your ex-husband, didn't you know on some level that he was gay? And I think that this is what women struggle with, is the fact that when they tell people, my husband's gay, people look at you like, you mean to tell me you didn't know anything? You mean to tell me you couldn't tell he was gay? And I'm being really honest with you, I couldn't. You know, there was just no way that I could understand the fact that a macho man who was a martial arts expert would want to marry me, a woman, and be gay. Like, it didn't even function in my brain. Do you feel that people don't even think along those lines?
Yeah, I totally agree. And then the thing about it is, if you don't know, you just don't know. And for many of us, you know, we were sheltered. So my mom and dad didn't sit around saying, baby girl, come in here. Let me just tell you the difference between a straight man and a gay man. Nobody talked about that. You know, even if there was a suspicion that maybe aunt this one and aunt that one weren't really real close friends, they had a different type of relationship, you still didn't talk about it. At least in my family, I mean, we didn't even talk about, how could you talk about gay if you don't even talk about sex? And how can you even talk about men when your parents try to keep you as naive as they possibly could because they felt like the more you knew about sex, it increased the likelihood that you would have it. So the only thing they told you was keep your legs closed. That was it. And if you couldn't be friends with
that was
a man,
your old sex. That was your sex education, right?
That was sex education. Randolph family style. That was it. That was it. And so how can you know? There are many women out there. And I'm finding out, just like I confess often, even though I was married, I've been married twice before my dear, dear Robert, I didn't know nothing about men. And a lot of women, if we were to really to admit it to ourselves, we don't know nothing about men, not really. We only know about the person that we're with and our experience of them. But really knowing how men are wired, you know, why they do what they do, knowing their language, knowing how they're socialized, we don't usually go that deep. We start with attraction, and that's it. We don't go
right.
that deep to try to really know.
So really, I had a guest on the show last week, this young lady who I really like, and her name is Tara Helfgott, and Tara lives in New York. She's going to be back on my show next month because we really didn't get through a lot of her book because she was just so interesting. And it's called Looking for Mr. Straight, A Guide to Identifying the Closeted Gay Men You May Be Dating. And Tara's in her 30s. This book came out, I think, you know, she started writing the book maybe 8 years ago or 9 years because she wanted to have as much information as possible. It's kind of like a Sex and the City kind of book for women who live that kind of life, you know, which is, you know, the modern day life in New York of the single woman and the men they date. And she has tremendous perception when you look at, you know, through her book on things that I would not have thought about. But I bring it up because you just made a comment. And I don't know if you really thought about this either, but when she's talking about the difference between what when you can suspect somebody is gay, there's a certain way that straight men behave. You know, they're really not into all this emotional feeling and the depth that women are, because that's where they say men are from Mars and women are from Venus. So when you find a guy who's, you know, all over you and talking about all the same emotional things that you are, you know, you think you found the perfect man. But straight men don't usually talk the same way that gay men talk. And I thought that was so interesting because, you know, it's really true. From the gay, and that's not a put-down, it's just a difference. But it's a red flag that we have to really look at, that if somebody's talking much too much and about too much emotional and deep stuff, and, you know, it feels like you're talking to your best girlfriend, then that's really something to look out for. Do you agree with that?
I do kind of, sort of. I'm kind of teetering, and I'll tell you why. Because I know that one of the things that I had a conversation with a man a couple of months ago, and he was talking about what to look for in a man. And one of the things that he talked about was that the evolved man, that they know how to self-correct and that they are more empathetic and that there's a sense of peace when you are with them, a sense of peace because they have done their own inner work. And so it can be very confusing, especially if a man has gone to a lot of therapy or, you know what I'm saying, where he is one of those people that he has been taught because of working through his own issues, to be more self-aware. He may be a person that talks more in depth than maybe the average Joe. So I think she has a point, but I don't think you can really.
I think it's inclined to talk. Not so much introspective. This is what I know of myself. It's when you have a husband who's gossiping all the time about people. Like you were talking to
Yeah, because my
straight men don't talk that way.
Yeah, that's true. Now he did. My first husband. Yeah, I used to tell him that when it came to the church world of who was doing what with whom, that he really should have, he had the news, the media down pat. I said, my God, y'all just got this. You should be a reporter. You should be the church reporter because you know what's going on in everybody's household. You know the
exactly.
latest gossip. You know who's doing
exactly.
who. You know who's gay. You know who's straight. You know, he just was like the chatty Cathy.
Mm-hmm.
Like chatty Cathy when it came to that. So you know, from that standpoint, she does have a point. I would definitely say red flag. Because if you do feel like when you're talking to a guy, that you're talking to one of your girlfriends, you want to say,
mm-hmm.
oh, girl. You know, you got to catch yourself and say, oh, girl. Then, you
I know.
I would
so scary. But these are little things that I would have never thought of, you know. But
yeah,
she has so many great tips. Yeah. This is a really good book if you have a chance to read it. Looking for Mr. Straight.
I'm going to have to.
Yeah, it really gives you some great insights into the way that, and she has gay men in here interviewed also who used to pass as straight but then came to terms with themselves, and they give a lot of good tips too. So I'm going to have her talk more about that when she comes on. But it is a confusing issue, and I told that to my friend today. I said, even though when you keep saying to me, didn't you know? No, I did not know. No, I wasn't tipped off, and even if I was on some level tipped off that maybe he tried something in the past, that would not stop me from going for him, because I grew up in the age of when sexual promiscuity was going all around the world. You know, everybody was doing everybody.
Yeah, and actually, you bring up a great point. I think because we women a lot of times don't know how men are wired. And
right.
like in my case, I heard that to a man, sex was just sex. So I figured, you know, well, if that happened to him when he was younger and he decides that now he wants me, I mean, what's really the difference? Sex is sex. So my major thing is I just want to make sure that he's in love with me, that he wants to marry me, he wants to have a family with me. What he did in his past, if he says it was in the past, then, you know, it's in the past. But what are we always told? Men don't think about sex the way we do. So I can kind of say, well, okay, cool. I mean, you know, he should know that if he finds me attractive and wants to marry me and wants to have a life with me, you know, then, you know, he should know. But the interesting thing, I was talking to a gentleman that wanted me to coach him. And he was having some different sexual type issues and so forth. And one of the ladies that he was trying to have a relationship with told him, you know, I know you like to cross-dress, let's use that as an example. I know you like to cross-dress and whatever. And she says to him, well, you know, I'm okay with that as long as you only do it, you know, maybe once a month or whatever. And, you know, if I can put a quantity to it, I'll let you go out and do it, you know. It's almost like somebody saying, well, you can go out and do it as long as you don't bring it home. You know, things like that. A lot of times we'll try, if you're attracted to somebody, we'll try to work with them if we don't have a very healthy view, a very healthy love for how we're wired, and respect and honor for how we're wired, we'll try to work with you. And the thing was that I was telling him, I said, you know what, you can't go by what she's saying. I said, because she's setting herself up. Because after a while, because you know it's not going to just be one time a month, after a while, the longer you all are married or together, and the more you stop feeling pressure, you're going to feel more and more of a desire to get out and go get your needs met elsewhere. And it's going to make her more clingy, and it's going to make you want to run more, and it's going to cause her to be very devastated. And after a while, you're not going to want to touch her because she's pressuring you too much, and she's going to feel alone and isolated and feel betrayed. I gave you an inch, and you took a mile. I said, so I'm not going to allow you to allow her to be in denial. The truth of the matter is, if you don't find women attractive, it's going to bother her because she's attracted to you. y'all are both setting yourselves up. I said, and I'm not going to sit here and allow you to be in denial without telling you so. So I said it to say that even we women, sometimes we set ourselves up. We think, well, if we don't know nothing about it, if you can keep it outside the house, if you can still, you know, be my buddy, be my friend, treat me right, still act like you want to have sex with me, still make me feel all these things, I'll stay in denial. Go ahead. Do your thing. I give you that. Just keep within these parameters. And but the truth of the matter is, anytime you try to negotiate with something that's taking something away from you, it's never going to work. It's never going to work. You're negotiating down. It's never going to work. There's
somebody's
no bargaining
going to end up losing. And usually both of you will end up losing, right?
Exactly. It's like you can't bargain. How can you bargain with somebody who even if they're bisexual, I would not want to commit my life or commit my time with somebody that I don't know what side of the bed you're waking up on.
Well, I'm going to be honest, and I always tell this to our women. You know, when I first found out about my ex-husband, you know, I was in the marriage for a short time. I had a baby who was about 8 months old at the time. I was pretty already emotionally beaten down from, you know, him, because that's the kind of person he is. Had nothing to do with his being gay, just his personality. But I'd lost a lot of myself already. And when I found out that there was, quote, a moment of weakness with somebody, as you like to call it, you know, and that it would never happen again, and, you know, he's sorry and blah, blah, blah. And I said to him, once again, I went through the bargaining too, and I said to him, look, if once every 6 months you have to go out and do something that I don't know about and I'm not going to find out about, then I can live with that. And once I gave that inch, it became a matter of feet and yards within a very short time. Because you give your permission, as they don't hear all the surrounding factors. They just hear the permission. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, and if they don't have self-discipline, self-control, and most of the time, since the person's not telling their own self the truth, you know, I look at it like, if you are hungry for something, let's say I hadn't eaten in a while, and I'm hungry, you can't make a meal off crumbs. So even if you're giving a person once a month or once every 6 months, that's crumbs. If they're hungry, they don't want to get everything they can get. You know, like just eat everything, because they're hungry, they're going to get to do it. It's like, I'm going to get everything I can out of this because I got to wait another 6 months. I'm going to get everything I can out of this because it's like you're trying to contain something that they can't contain. It just doesn't work.
I think that's so well put. You know, they can't contain themselves. How are you containing it?
Exactly. How? And the thing about it, it's just like somebody told me, I learned a very valuable lesson. This was from a heterosexual man. We had been friends for quite a few months, and we decided we were going to date. Well, because we had been friends for quite a few months, I had already told him, well, no, we had been friends for a couple of months, and I thought that because we had been friends that we started to be exclusive, we could go on and have sex because we had already had, you know, a foundation of friendship. So there was no need of going through the 90-day rule and all these other kind of things because we know each other, right? Well, the thing I found out was when we were kissing each other, he would tell me he'd do anything because he was so into, locked and loaded into having sex with me, he would have told me he would have married me just to have
uh-huh.
Now, if that's true of a heterosexual man, how much more true is it for a homosexual man who is a man? Understand, he's still a man. It's just that his orientation is different. So if a man would tell you anything, a heterosexual man would tell you anything, to get in your underwear if he finds you attractive, how much more would a homosexual man tell you anything for him to get with who he wants to get with? It's the nature of the beast.
Well, that's my whole point. It's so rare when I have a guy come to me. I mean, it's happened to me maybe 3 times, and he tells me, you know, I'm married, but I haven't cheated on my wife yet. Because usually when they come to me for help, it's because they've met somebody and they want to move on. So, but I did, you know, I have met about 3 men who really didn't cheat. They just knew they were gay, but they thought it would be wrong to cheat while they were married, which I can appreciate it. But if it was with your friend who was cross-dressing, was he saying that he was not attracted to women?
Yeah, this person, actually he wasn't a friend. He was a person that was
a client, okay.
Yeah, and one of the things that he said about it when it came to sex with women, he felt pressured. If they wanted to have sex with him, he felt pressured. And the interesting thing was, I thought about my first husband. As long as he was in the driver's seat and could control the affection, the intimacy, the whatever, he was okay. But he wasn't okay if I initiated. Because I guess if somebody else initiates, you're not in control anymore.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, but possibly that might have been his issue. These women were wanting because they found him attractive. They were wanting it. And the more they wanted it, the more he didn't want to. And I said, that's a clear signal right there. If you already know that, then it's no need to leave these women on. If you are, and then don't act like because they say, well, you know what, I can deal with it. I said, uh-uh. I said, that's denial on their part. And because I'm telling you the truth, you're responsible now. Before you could say, I didn't know. But me being a woman, I'm telling you because I've gone through this myself. Exactly what they're doing. So you cannot act like you don't know anymore.
So did he change?
Well, I haven't talked to him in a while because that was my coaching client. I had to stop. I had to stop because one of the things I've learned is this. You got to be coachable. And if a person tells you they won't help, but they're not willing to do the work,
right,
then they're not coachable. And
right,
we tried, but after a while, it was to the point I was like, you know what? It's like whenever I tell you something and you agree in the moment, then the next time we have a coaching session, you don't do it. And you have all these, and you go right back into the same denial, same thing, same justification. Well, you know, we got along well today. Nobody, she didn't pressure me today. We just were like good friends today. I'm like, it's just a matter of time because she finds you attractive. I said, don't you know that's what makes us women want to sleep with you? When we have a great time with you. When you're kind. When you're loving. When you're playful. When you're chivalrous. That makes us want to sleep with you. So it's going to be short-lived. So it was just one of those things where it's like he was just stuck. And no matter what I told him, he could not seem to put one foot in front of the other. So I told him, I said, you know what? I said, the thing about a coach is this. I said, if you're stuck because of some deep-rooted psychological unresolved issue, you need to go see somebody in that professional realm, a psychiatrist, a therapist, and work with your stuff. I said, because when you come to a coach, there has to be something in you that's ready to move forward. Not, oh, I wish I wasn't this way, but I'm willing to do the work to make decisions so I won't keep right on violating other women. Because of my denial.
You know, I have a different theory with that too, Suzette. Not to say it's opposite of what you're saying, it may be in conjunction with what you're saying. I really feel that sometimes people aren't looking for real change. They're looking for validation of their behavior.
Mm.
Because if they come to you week in and week out and they're not making any positive change and they keep repeating, and you're still working with them, like you said, you know, you had to cut it. But for those who keep working and working with them, then it's just kind of validating their bad behavior. And I know that is a fact from personal experience. Some people just want you to accept their behavior, and that validates them.
Well, they want you to feel sorry for their story and feel compassionate. And I'm one of the most compassionate, empathetic people you'll ever meet. But the thing about it is I'm very realistic. And and I started seeing, I said, you know what, if I don't cut this, then what I will do is I'll be yet another woman that is allowing him to get away with allowing him to be okay. Oh, well, you know, we'll try this. Well, I'll be another woman that's allowing him to use her to justify not being responsible for how he was behaving. And I said, I cannot do that. I can't do it. I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm going to give it straight, no chaser. Well, especially when it comes to men, I give it to them straight, no chaser. And then I'm like, and I even put the boundaries very clear. I said, if we can't get this car out of reverse, first thing being telling these women the truth and stop keeping this cycle going of giving them hope that there can be a relationship when you don't want to sleep with them. I said, you're going to have to cut it with them, because what you're doing is you're setting them up for pain, and I cannot be privy to that. He agreed.
Yeah, did he see it your way?
Oh, yeah, he agreed. He agreed, and we even role-played how he was going to tell the woman that he could no longer see her.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we talked again, did you do it? Well, this came up. Then it started, well, can we change our coaching? A lot of avoidance, and I started realizing, and I saw it. And I said, I noticed that when you come close to having to be accountable for your actions and be responsible, you bob and weave and you avoid and you do that. And he didn't deny it. He said, you're right. I said, well, here's the problem. I said, in order for me to continue to coach you, you have to do what you said you need to do. I said, part of my job is to hold you accountable to moving forward towards what you say you want. And you said you want to stop hurting women. That's what you said.
And I think that's the best part that you can bring up, that people have to be accountable for their actions. You know, anybody can say anything, right?
They have to be. That's the proof.
Mm-hmm.
The proof is not in what you say. The proof is in what you do. Because you can tell me all day, I hate I'm hurting women. I hate I'm hurting women. I hate I'm hurting women. And if you keep hurting them, then no, you don't hate you're hurting.
Maybe they don't really hurt. They really don't hate it. Maybe there's something within them that wants to keep doing it.
Or it's like, you know, I kind of hate this, but I'd rather feed my ego more. Or I kind of hate this, but I need whatever it is you're giving me so that I feel validated inside. So if it's between you and me, I'm going to choose me. So I'm sorry you're getting hurt, but I got to choose me. And my thing is, there is no way, whether it's a woman or a man, there is no way you can coach somebody if they are determined to be stuck. You can't, because coaching is forward movement.
Mm-hmm.
You got to take a step. You've got to take a step. And if you can't take a step that you say you need to take, then maybe you're not ready for coaching. You need to spend some more time in therapy.
You have to be ready to make a move when you're being coached. You can't just stand stable and stagnant and, you know, refuse to give any motion backwards or forwards. I mean, if you want to stand still, you don't need a coach, right?
Exactly. You can't. It goes against coaching. It goes against what coaching is about. Coaching
Can you talk
about
a little bit about coaching, Suzette?
Sure. and as you, Bonnie, says it so well, coaching is about going from point A to point B. Coaching is about forward movement. And many times in the coaching relationship, what a good coach does is he or she listens to what your goal and your intentions are and helps you to get as clear about that as you can get. And then that coach sits with you and helps you to design a way for you to move toward that goal. And that coach also helps you determine what have been some of your pitfalls before, what have been some of those things that have hung you up before, what are the things that have kept you from moving forward before, and let's devise a plan where you can anticipate those things and you know how to navigate your way through. And I keep you accountable to what we work through together. But now, we can work together, but you're the one that has to make the move.
Can you explain to people what the difference is between coaching and therapy?
Certainly.
You know, as far as, like, if you were going to a therapist, that could take years, right?
Oh, some people, I call them professional clients, because some therapists and psychiatrists have been providing services to people for years, and because they deal with, you know, your past. A lot of psychiatrists and so forth, they look back at your past and try to look for clues as to what might have happened or how did it cause you to be stuck, and let's deal with that. Let's go back and heal it. Let's go back and deal with it. Let's go back and help, and I'm going to help you work through it so that you can function more fully and more optimally, because this thing is keeping you from being able to own your life. It's hindering you in such a significant way that we've got to do something about this. Basically, you're in crisis. There's something that happened to you that has you stunted and stilted, and we've got to work through the angst and the hurt and the trauma of it. They use various disciplines and various ways to help you to resolve your psychic emotional pain that usually has its origins in some past trauma that left you debilitated and compromised, unable to move forward.
Like, for instance, in a typical coaching relationship, is it ongoing, or is there a time limit set to it?
Coaching has a beginning and an end.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to know.
It shouldn't be something that happens over and over. The only way that coaching usually continues is after you have, you know, reached that particular goal. A lot of times there's another goal on the other side of the goal. So then you broker a new coaching relationship based on the new goal. But it's not this continuous revolving door thing, the same thing over and over and over and without any progress. No, it doesn't work that way.
So do you feel that you can benefit from coaching if you've never been to a therapist before? Is there any connection there or no?
Well, it depends on the person. And with us talking, especially with women who are in or have been in relationships with gay men, it depends on how long you were in it and how deeply it affected your self-esteem. Because there's some women that they get it, and as soon as they find out that guy is gay, they out. They don't stay around. They might have had children together. They might have caught him with another man. And, you know, they're like, I'm out. So that person may not have been in it long enough for their self-esteem to be that compromised. So therefore, they may be like, okay, you know, I know it was my fault because I didn't make him gay. You know, they may have that inner fortitude where they don't feel like they were the problem, they didn't compromise themselves, you know, they weren't defined by what he did. So a person like that, sure, you can coach them. But if that person has gone through a lot of abuse and a lot of neglect and their layers and depths to how their self-esteem kept getting knocked down worse and worse and worse, and maybe they had some issues before they even went in, and marrying this man only brought those things up even more so. Like, for instance, let's say the person might have been molested as a child. And maybe to survive it, they can't remember it. Their symptoms, you know, that they don't know how to quite read yet. They might have go into panic attacks when a man touches them. You know, there might be some kind of visceral thing that happens, but they don't know what happened. But it's starting to cause some problems. And let's say maybe the reason they were attracted to this man is because he didn't touch them.
Uh-huh.
Maybe he didn't want to have sex with them. So therefore, they thought they were safe. They were in the clear.
Right.
Okay. You see what I'm saying? But there was something
Absolutely.
Else that happened that really they needed to get help for anyway. So a person like that would need to go to a psychiatrist or a therapist that can help them walk through using different
mm-hmm.
things, whether it's hypnosis.
Yeah, I think that's more like childhood trauma that follows you throughout your life unless you get it resolved, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of
yeah.
things that people bury from their childhoods because it's too painful, and they think
that
if they just, you know, blow it away, it's going away. But in reality, you know, it's not like that at all. It keeps creeping up and popping up when you least expect it, right?
And it paralyzes you. It's like a woman who cannot respond. Let's say
mm-hmm.
she's in a heterosexual relationship and her husband complains. You know, every time I get ready to touch her, she draws up. And I ask her if anything happened to her back in her past, and she says she can't remember if anything happened. But yet, every time
mm-hmm.
I get ready to kiss her, she draws up. And this is causing problems in our relationship. And it's visceral. She can't control it. It's like she breaks out in a sweat. She has a panic attack whenever I touch her. So, yeah, you got to go deeper into something like that. A coach is not, you know, that's a little bit much for a coach. Because there's obviously something that happened in her past.
Mm-hmm.
That she's got to resolve, and coaching does not, of course, coaching acknowledges that we all have a past, and coaching acknowledges that there is residue from our past, but the past is not the focus.
Right, and this is really wonderful for women who are restarting their lives all over again, and, you know, they're coming out of a marriage, they are coming out different than when they went in, and you know, the marriage, once again, they didn't have a direction they were going in. They were just trying to be in survival mode through that whole time. And now they have to start all over again, and they're really unclear on what direction to go in. And this is where coaching can really be powerful and helpful, because it's like having your own personal cheerleader for you. And, you know, it's not like a family member or a good friend. You're an objective person who's not personally involved or emotionally involved with the person, who can maybe see things more clearly than people who are emotionally wrapped up with you. So a lot of times friends mean well and parents mean well, and in their meaning well doesn't mean it's necessarily the best thing for you for moving ahead, because they may have emotional attachments to your exes or whatever the case is. So it may be much more difficult for them to be objective than a coach who is cheering you on to succeed for you and who's not concerned about your past history. You know,
and
the coach wants to see you move ahead, right?
And sometimes in that family dynamic, maybe boundaries are eroded all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't think there's anything wrong with it.
Right, they're your family. They can say what they want to say. Exactly. They can do what they want to do, right?
Right, and then you get into coaching and you find out, wait a minute, I got to set some boundaries with my ex, or I got to set some boundaries with my gay husband. And your family's not going to be able to help you with that because y'all erode each other's boundaries all the time. So a coach can help you to learn to set boundaries and hold you accountable in a very caring yet firm way to say, wait a minute, this is your self-value. Your value of yourself is contingent upon you being able to set some boundaries. So let's work on that. Let's work on some scenarios. Sometimes you get into role playing, and a lot of what I do as a coach also, Bonnie, is a lot of times you're educating people about what's healthy and what's not, because nobody's ever told them the difference. A lot of times they're given to extremes, and sometimes people are given to certain things, and they don't know what's healthy. They don't know what's balanced. They don't know, you know, they don't know the difference. And sometimes as coaches, we have to be that mirror. We have to be that gauge. We have to provide them with resources and certain things to kind of help them to educate themselves as to what is healthy, what would feed my self-esteem, how am I taking away from my self-esteem by this that I'm tolerating. You know, all these things all come into play. So a lot of times when people get finished with being coached, they're making, not just dealing with the relationships with their husbands or whatever, but they're looking at their whole lives, and it changes the dynamic with how they treat themselves with other people. They might set boundaries with their boss. They might be able to say, I'm sorry, I have plans tonight. I can't work until 10. Whereas before, they couldn't say that. So
a lot of times boundaries are really based on learning how to be assertive for yourself. And, you know, assertiveness really helps in many situations, especially when you're dealing with people who are narcissistic or controlling. And it's easy to lose, you know, track of that if you don't understand about assertiveness. But I grew up in a generation a little before you, not much, but a little bit ahead of you. During the 1960s. It was a really important movement for assertiveness, and it started out for women, because in the whole women's rights movement, women were just so used to doing everything that they had to do or were expected, quote unquote, to do, you know, by men. And they were always afraid to ask for something that they wanted because they didn't think they were entitled to it. Because that's how we would socialize women. You were there to please men. That's your job. You have to be the wife. You have to stay at home. You have to raise the children. You have to take care of all the household chores. You have to do the cooking. You have to do the shopping. There was a defined role for women, really, up until World War II at least. You know, things got a little different then because they needed women in the workforce. But when that war was over, things went back to abnormal. And it wasn't until the 60s when this whole movement for assertiveness came out that women finally could say, guess what? I'm allowed to say what I want, and I don't have to get hostile to say it. And I don't have to be screaming at somebody. I have to just express what I want for me. So that if you want something, you have to learn to ask for it, right?
That's right. And the thing about it is, that is what assertiveness is all about. It's not trying to bully somebody into doing what you want them to do, because that's aggressive. And it's not, you know, just saying, well, okay, whatever you want, I'll just be last. You know, that's the total opposite end. But assertive comes from a place of self-value. And it's like, I don't have to devalue. It's like it's a mutual value. I value you, I value me. And so when I assert myself, it's coming from a standpoint of valuing myself enough to speak up and valuing you enough to tell you the truth. So, you know,
I'll give you some prime examples in case women don't understand this whole concept of assertiveness. You know, I used to be a very outgoing, vocal kind of person for everybody else but myself. But for instance, I know this sounds like so silly, but for instance, have you ever been to dinner and you order something and it's just not right? If that mm-hmm. happened to me, I would just say, okay, I'm just having a bad dinner. I would never think to say to the waiter, can you take this back and change it? It's not right. And that mm-hmm. would have mortified me. And I just could never do it. And one night I went out to dinner with my aunt when I was in my 20s in New York. And she ordered swordfish or something, and it came. And she said, this isn't right. I'm sending, you know, I'd like for you to change it. And I said to her, how did you do that? She says, how did I do what? I said, how is it you didn't care about saying you want something different after you already got it? She says, first of all, she said, I worked really hard to make the money to pay for this dinner. She said, second, I don't know who that waiter is, and I don't know who the cook is. I don't care about their feelings. You know, that's the whole thing. When you're non-assertive, you're always worried, what are other people going to think of you? People who have no relationship with you whatsoever, like if I'd be afraid to take something back to a clothing store. I don't know these people, but I was embarrassed, and I thought, well, they're going to think something bad of me. So when I look back to how I used to be until I started training myself in assertiveness, you know, and I did a lot of assertiveness training with women because we're afraid to ask for what we want because we're so worried what will people think of us. And that inner need of having to feel loved and needed and people liking us for people who have nothing to do with us. You know, and when you really think about it, I think we're all victims of this, you know, at some point of our life that we're not strong enough to be, you know.
Yeah.
But if you don't become assertive, what happens is, like you were saying, you do become aggressive. And I could see it in myself. When I was younger, for instance, I had this one girl who used to call me, I guess in my 25 or 30 years old, and I really didn't particularly like her. And I don't know if you've ever had anybody like this. Once you got her on the phone, you couldn't get her off. Like that conversation could go for an hour, and you couldn't even get a word in because she's talking about her. Do you ever meet somebody like that? And it got to the point where we didn't have caller ID then. I didn't know it was her. You know, this was before caller ID, and I would pick up the phone and say, hi, Bonnie, and I just knew, oh, and I didn't have, you know, the guts to say, I really don't have time to talk to you right now, or can you cut it short? You know, I was so afraid of offending her. But finally, what happened was because I couldn't assert myself, I didn't know how to do that. The hostility in me just grew and grew until one day I blew up at her and screamed at her. And I said, you know, don't you understand what you're doing? You know, I was, like, very frustrated that day, and then I get a call with her on the phone. You know, you're taking up my valuable time. You spend an hour and a half with me on the phone. You don't let me get a word in. You know, I don't want you to call me ever. But I was really nasty. And, you know, if I had been assertive from the beginning and just set limits and set boundaries, you know, I wouldn't have had that happen. But I think a lot of times we're afraid because we're always those little, you know, pleasing women who have to please everybody all the time. And I think that's the general nature of women as a whole. I'm not saying there's not exceptions, but I think women are socialized to please and to make people happy. Do you think so?
I totally agree. And a lot of times, the more emotionally attached we are, it's even that much more hard. You know, it's even harder. And I was reading something by Brene Brown. She has a new book out called Rising Strong. And one of the things that she talks about is empathy. You know, that, you know, one of the things that we have to learn is just because I empathize with you doesn't change what I need. You know, it's almost like she used the example of boundary setting with your children, how she said, like, yes, I know what it's like to be young. Yes, I understand if you think I'm crazy. Yes, you're grounded. You know, it's like, I can be empathetic, but it still doesn't change the fact. And one of the things, and I'll paraphrase because of the way it helped me, because when it's my friends, it's not as easy to be assertive with my friends. And one of the things that I value so much from having read the book is I found my backbone get a little bit straighter, because one of the things she said, you know, it's okay to say, you know what, I know you're doing the best you can. I know this is bothering you. I know you're having a hard time. I know this. But we need to have a conversation about what's okay and what's not okay when it comes to how you treat me. It's like, yeah, I know all these things happen, and I can be empathetic with you, but it still doesn't change what I need.
I think it's just so hard to change when you're not that personality to start with. I fight every day to change myself, you know, to not be so nice, not be so helpful, not to meet a person and feel like it's my duty to change your life today and make it better. You know, it's really hard because, you know, that's who I am, and I try to set bigger boundaries because otherwise you could really go crazy, you know, offering people everything you have and every moment you have, and people who don't even mean anything to you just, I mean, I don't know where that comes from. I guess low self-esteem. But my self-esteem isn't even that low anymore. And I'm still doing it. I guess it's just a bad habit. But I just love helping people. I don't know, but I let them over. But I think what you were saying before about your friends is really true. Like, for instance, one thing I'm really bad at, I don't know if you're any better at it, I'm really bad if I lend somebody money and then they don't pay me back. Like, I feel embarrassed to ask them, do you have my money yet? I mean, that makes me feel like I'm belittling them. Would you have a problem with that or no?
Girl, I know probably there's so many people listening to this going, oh, man, I had that trouble, too. I used to have that trouble. Then I started realizing it was hurting me more than it was hurting them. You know, it's like,
it doesn't seem to be hurting them at all. It's just hurting us.
You can borrow money from me and owe me and still go out and buy you some shoes, get your hair done, get your nails done, and show me how pretty you look. And I'm sitting there looking all crazy, like the deer in the headlight, wondering, how in the world you got all this gumption to come in front of me and prance around when I went.
That's exactly right.
But the thing about it, I had to take ownership. It's like, you know what, but Suzette, you didn't say nothing, so you can't blame them for you not saying anything. And so that one is a hard one. And what I had to ultimately stop doing is stop lending money because it was just too hard. It was
How do you say now when people ask you?
It's like, you know what? I understand, but I'll be honest with you. I usually don't lend money because if I lend it, I really expect to get it back. And usually if I don't get it back, I get really upset. And I don't want that to happen between you and me.
Do they buy that story?
Yeah, because I stick to it. Because I know I'm the one, you know, it's almost like you get to a point where you're like, but I don't want to suffer this. So I'm just going to tell you the truth. And I'm like, I know it's terrible. I know it's terrible. I'll be the first to say it. I know it's terrible. I said, but you know what? I would rather to make sure our friendship stays in place. Because I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be acting really, really funny. And I don't want you to feel like I'm hounding you every time. But I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to be wondering when she's going to pay me. I said, if we agree that there's a certain date you're going to pay me and you don't do it, I'm going to tell you now. I'm going to have trouble with it. And I know it probably happened a long, long time ago when somebody took my piggy bank money. I know. But just, you know what, I'm not healed in that area yet. And so I recommend that we just don't do it. I mean, I just self-depreciate. I just do. Because the truth of the matter is, it's my problem. It really is my problem. You're right. It's my problem.
Well, maybe on the next show we can talk more about assertiveness issues and how to handle them. I think our women could really use that in setting boundaries. So we'll save that for next month's show because we're running out of time. Suzette, you can contact her by her website or by emailing her. Give them the website.
My website is www.suzetterhinton.com. Or you can use Bonnie because she always gives her good ideas.
You can write to me or go on my links at gayhusbands.com to the links section and find Suzette's contact information there. And that's probably easier than trying to find her online sometimes. But that's okay. Either way works good. Or write to me and I'll tell you. Anyway, I love you, Suzette. Thank you so much. I hope you'll consider coming to Virginia when I go there. I'm getting closer. And I know our women want to meet you.
I was like, I want
to go. Okay, good. So everybody, we'll be back with you again next week, and with Doctor Who will be back at the end of the month. All right, everybody, love you. Love you, Suzette.
Love you too, Bonnie.
All right, good night.
Good night.